Bonjour, je suis Olivier Panis et vous m'écoutez, et l'article est pour F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula 1. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 594, August 10th, 2012. Nass?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Randy Travis and his latest album, On the Road Again.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, remember Braun GP? Why is Mercedes languishing? Will Marussia and HRT be back for 2013? Does Mark Webber really have a chance at the 2012 World Championship? And, of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. And special interview on today's podcast is with a new upcoming young talent by the name of Edward Jones. And this weekend's special B&B interview podcast is going to be with Matthew Brabham. Yes, indeed. You recognize the name? That would be Big Jack's grandson. And on top of that, we have a special with an F1 Weekly listener that we will divulge in the future. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Good to see you again. Hope all is well.
Everything is absolutely wunderbar. It is the summertime. Everybody's on vacation. And I'm sure you're having a hot dog of a time.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I thought.
Hot dog and cheeseburgers during the day.
Exactly. And that's what we do here in beautiful California. But I was thinking about a few things this weekend. Remember Braun GP? How wonderful they were once Honda left.
One hit wonder.
They won the world championship. Jenson Button finally becomes the man he is today. And you would have thought that with Mercedes taking over that team, the kind of money, Norbert Hogg, the knowledge, the resources in Alemania, that they would be doing better instead of being fifth in the Constructors' World Championship. I know, Nico got a win, and we were all giggling and happy that day. But nevertheless, when you have talent like Ross Braun, Michael Schumacher, and Mercedes AMG, I would have thought by now they would have put it together and be, I think, neck and neck with Lotus F1. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, they've hired a lot of people, like you mentioned, top line driver like Michael Schumacher. I think Jeff Willis is still there. Ross Braun is there. And you don't hear much about Pat Fry these days. And Nick Fryer
was the other guy.
Yeah, excuse me. So I think they have more on the engineering side. They have more than enough Gordon Ramsay's in the kitchen. That's where part of the problem is. And this was brought up in some magazine also a couple of months ago, that they have a very deep talent pool. And when you have a lot of people, egos sometimes get in the way. And as far as the German involvement is concerned, you know, there's a lot of technology with Mercedes, no shortage of resources there, and this team is based in Brackley, UK, which is where a Formula One team should be based. But I've been thinking that, you know, maybe they are suffering from the same problem as Toyota and BMW. You know, Toyota and Honda had also a program where a lot of decisions were being made in Tokyo because that's where their home base was. And then we saw with BMW's involvement with Williams, there was a serious clash of culture, or whatever you want to call it, that what the partner in Munich wanted to do did not go down very well with Grove, and the program was terminated, I believe, a year earlier. So, but they need to get this thing sorted out. And with all due respect and love and affection for Michael Schumacher, to me, you know, I really thought, you know, I said it many times, that he would maul and overhaul Nico. Obviously, it has not happened in 3 years, so it's not going to happen in the fourth year. So I think what they should do is get rid of this novelty and bring in some young, like a Paul Di Resta, somebody they can groom, or a Nico Hülkenberg. They need to bring in some young guy. Nico Rosberg has proven he's a race winner. So I would like to see some changes there.
Yes. No, I tend to agree. I think Michael Schumacher, in the end, they thought that with his know-how and skill and world championships in his back pocket, that he would be able to help develop the team, not only around him, but get the car up to speed and competitive. And really, the recipe hasn't worked.
Well, it's pretty obvious it has not working. And when you have Nico Rosberg on a normal basis running ahead of you every season, you know, some changes, heads need to roll.
I agree. And I certainly hope that Schumacher, who is usually surrounded by fairly intelligent advisors, I think he should become realistic, because really, if he comes back in 2013, I think it's going to look very selfish on his part, because really all he's doing is entertaining himself at this level of motorsports, where he really doesn't need the money. He certainly doesn't need more championships or more wins. No. He's got all the accolades he'll ever need.
He's actually hurting his percentage, you know, if you look at it.
That's true.
And so
his yeah. What do you call that? His run bat average?
Yeah, something like that. You're a you know, stick and ball kind of guy, so you would know that better.
No, it's very true, and it's interesting. But anyway, Ross Braun, he's been out saying that we've got to improve. He says, we haven't got the car quite as we wanted right now, but we have a very good team, very good people, so I am optimistic that we are going to have a stronger second half of the season than the first half. I think we are pleased with some of the achievements this year. We've won a race and had some strong podiums, and we've scored more points than we'd done this time last year. You know what? And that's just not good enough, because you did terrible last year. And I think you're right. I think there could be too much micromanagement from Berlin.
More like Stuttgart.
Well, you know, I like saying Berlin because it comes off great. You know, the headmasters, the machismos. So that's my point. Let's see what they can do, because really, I think Mercedes is going to get impatient. That is the board members.
You know, and there is, you know, there have been some board members, you know, thinking of pulling Mercedes out of Formula One in the past.
Absolutely.
Recent past. There's another thing, you know, is if Michael Schumacher cannot compete with Nico Rosberg, as we have seen last 3 years, what would a Alonso or a Hamilton do in that car against Schumacher?
That's, my goodness, especially Fernando El Hombre. We know what he could do with a weak car, because he's doing it all year.
Yeah, and you know, a guy that who's very good friends with Mr. Norbert Hogg is Kimi Raikkonen. So I would like to see how somebody like that will, how he will go in that car against Schumacher. So Schumacher may be more beyond the sell-by date than we think or than we realize. But, you know, of course, what has been achieved, nobody can knock that down, and I'm not trying to demean any of those, if you know what I mean.
As understanding you.
Yeah.
But still, it's going to be very interesting to watch the second half of the season, because I really don't expect that much from them. And if you're fighting, you know, with Force India, you really got to think about where you're at in Formula One.
You're in Bangladesh.
Exactly. Anyway, let's talk about Mark Webber. We said that the last time he's fighting for the World Championship in 2010, we thought that was going to be his last chance. And we were wrong. I think he's got a chance this year. But does he really have a chance now? And he signed for 2013. He said no to Ferrari, which was smart. He signed for 2013, so maybe he has two chances. But still, is he a number two, even though he's right behind Fernando Alonso by 40 points in the Drivers' World Championship. Can Mark Webber beat Fernando Alonso and stay ahead of a possibly resurging Sebastian Vettel?
My take on this?
Yes, sir.
The simple answer to your question is no. Just my opinion. And here is my two-peso logic. For him to beat Alonso, it will be very hard because Nando A is very good. He's very consistent, so it will be hard to beat him. Plus, you would need a very good car, you know, just like they had last year. If Red Bull can turn around and for the remaining races, starting with Spa, give a package that is head and shoulders above everything else, in that scenario, I think his problem would be what has been for the last few years, his own teammate.
Not only that, but
I think that doesn't mean that he's not a good driver. He's a very good driver, and he came so close to winning the championship. But it's just, you know, that circumstances, the stars are not aligning for him.
Yes, and we know about stars and moments winning the world championships and becoming so close. We can even ask Felipe Massa. He'll tell you all about it. But I'm going to agree with you. I think Mark Webber, in the end, is never really going to be a world champion. It's just not going to happen. Not with Sebastian Vettel as your teammate, and not while Fernando Alonso is leading the championship by 40 points in a very dependable Ferrari. The Ferrari might not be the fastest car on the field, but it is very dependable. And, of course, they have a very consistent and dependable driver. And that package right there is pretty tough.
And I just cannot see Fernando Alonso not finishing on the podium at Monza. And I think they're going to be pretty good in the top five for sure at Spa also.
Yes, Spa is going to be fantastic. Monza is going to be glorious. And Ferrari is going to pull all the stops out. I mean, yeah, there's no doubt. There's going to be upgrades for Monza. And it's going to be exciting.
And, you know, anytime you put a driver in a situation where he has to win last four of the five races or last three of the four races, I mean, we've seen things happen with Raikkonen and Sebastian Vettel. It just more and more pressure on the driver. So if Mark Webber is going to get into that situation, you know, Sebastian Vettel is not going to help him at all, you know.
Right.
And then Nando, even if he's finishing second, third, it just will make his life very hard.
Absolutely. Nando has the three wins. Mark Webber is also thinking about his legacy.
Yeah, and can you believe what will happen if Ferrari enters a second car in the championship where the guy starts scoring some point and
no way. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. They're allowed two cars.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Or at least two drivers.
Yes, exactly. But Mark Webber's thinking about his legacy because he's 35 years old. He is getting up there. He's going to be close to Michael Schumacher's age pretty soon. And he ultimately says that, "I've been very proud of what I've achieved. You always want more. That's normal. When I left Australia to have what I would call a reasonable career in Formula One, that was something which wasn't a guarantee when I left. So I think I've got what I deserve. I've chipped away and boxed at it. We've had some ups and downs, and to improve my statistics is in my hands. I'm going to have to work very, very hard. But in the end, it all adds up, and the numbers don't lie." So,
No, I have to agree with him, and anybody who knows his history, how he came through the ranks, you know, it was very hard work on his part to get to where he is, and for sure, people who follow the business are not going to forget him. He is leaving, you know, he's going to leave a good legacy, you know, he's a good competitor and led the championship for such a long time. He has won quite a few races, a couple of times in Monte Carlo, and his first win, if you recall, he was given, I believe, a drive-through penalty.
Germany.
Which was in Germany, and it was very impressive. So people are going to remember him with fond memories as they, you know, people like Peterson, Gilles Villeneuve, Michele Alboreto. None of these people won championships, but they are very well remembered.
That's true, and he'll be remembered as a clean and honest and true sportsman, unless some other. I don't foresee any dirty stuff coming up in the near future.
No, it's been it's been a pretty squeaky clean image and all that. But I'm just amazed how fit this guy is.
He is super fit.
That really impresses me. If you see him standing, the guy is just very, very fit.
That's very true. But he does work out a lot with your friend Lance Armstrong, and others. So,
and it's a pretty nice restaurant in Mr. Brazier's neighborhood.
Of course, and I've heard all about it. I'll have the opportunity one day, hopefully.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Anyway, big Q&A with the leader at HRT that came out yesterday. They seem to stay in the spotlight. They seem to be happy with their progress, even though they're last on the grid. What, 4 seconds slower, 5 seconds sometimes, of the leaders. How long do you think this team can stay in Formula One, including Marussia? I mean, these teams come and go. Look how long Virgin lasted. How long do you think these teams are going to stick around? Do you think we'll see both of these teams on the grid next year?
I think we will in some shape or form. Maybe the name will change again. I mean, you know, like this Russian-Canadian guy, Alex Schneider, when he bought Midland, turned around, sold it, made a big profit, and then gone from Formula One. Marussia, whatever they are called, at least it's a car company, a Russian sports car company. How deep pockets they have, only they know. So I don't know how long that will go. But if a man, a rich man, wealthy man, Richard Branson, takes a back seat, you know how much money this sport takes. And as far as the HRT is concerned, they were given some funds or some Japanese fund, Thesan Capital, which you can see their name on the car. They invested money in it. So they'll be around. These are Formula One franchises. You normally end up making a lot of money, just as Eddie Jordan. But so we will see them in one shape or form. But, you know, when you have an operation that has Pedro de la Rosa and Naren Karthikeyan, it's based in Spain, and one day the car is built here, next day it's built there. It's a little too scattered, you know.
Well, they've certainly done a better job than Super Aguri.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if that is a compliment.
Yeah, well, it's not. I'm just, you know, I have to have something to compare them to.
Well, you know, this is the reason I don't like, I'm talking strictly motorsport, I do not like agenda-driven motorsports where, you know, you're pushing a person of a certain race or a certain religion or a certain ethnic background or nationality. You know, this is serious level motor racing. You just can't. I mean, look what happened to that guy, Yuji Ide, you know. I mean, if you want to go Formula One racing, you need to base your team somewhere in England, within 100 miles or 50 miles of Silverstone. Hire some serious people. Don't, you know, like the other day when, was it Niki Lauda who asked Alonso when he won a race, you're a Spanish driver in an Italian car winning a race someplace, and he says, yeah, with a Greek designer. And so, you know, you got to bring in the best people and make something happen.
Absolutely.
And there are, you know, with all these cutbacks and hiring and firing, I hear now that Force India, I believe, might bring back Chris Dyer back into Formula One. And I always thought he was a pretty cool guy. And, you know, I met him at Monza some years ago. He was very nice and friendly. This is when he was with Ferrari in Ferrari uniform. Gave me a few minutes of his time. So there are people out there who can turn a outfit like HRT or Marussia or even, you know, the once great team USF one, if they bring
one
in
of
the
my favorites.
Yeah, if they bring in the right people, it's all about people. Any business, you know, you bring in the right people and give them some room to work with, things can happen.
I know.
I mean, just look at Jordan when they came to Formula One. Gary Anderson designed the car. He had never ever designed a Formula One car, but he had experience in this business. So if you have the right people and right management, things can happen.
Absolutely.
They say no rocket science.
Thank you, Nasser, for that deep and profound thought.
Yeah.
That was very, very impressive.
Yeah, I'm here to help.
I know. I could see that. Quickly, let's talk about Scuderia Toro Rosso. They've basically said no more development for 2012. They're really basically disappointed with the 2012 car and chassis, the whole package. And that's why Giorgio Ascanelli was sidelined last month, basically, as they say, put on gardening leave. The team is not happy with him. He's definitely out. They're looking to hire the ex-Sauber technical director, James Key. And they'll be recruiting other talents. So if they believe that the car is a disaster, they're blaming Ascanelli. Do you believe that Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo will be back next year because those two are doing the best they can with junk.
I think Wout will be back. Who are they going to put in? Nick DeFries, 16 years old.
Ujaide.
Yeah, there you go. No, I think they will be back, and they should be back. I mean, both have very good credentials, and this, you know, car is really going down the drain. But this article you're referring to in Autosport on Toro, rise and fall of Toro Rosso is very interesting, and there is a comment from Giorgio Ascanali that if a guy with a pistol goes to fight with a guy who has a machine gun, the guy with the pistol is a dead man. So that's how he was describing. It was as classic as Alain Prost calling his car a Ferrari a truck. Of course, you're going to get fired if you do these things. But, you know, their main problem is when they said you have to build your own car. So they need to bring in some. I think the key word now is aeropackage. You need a good aerodynamics. And, you know, one guy who is also very good, but I don't know when he can come back really, but he's already helping, I think Marussia, is Pat Simmons.
Very true.
Yeah, that guy knows. You know what? I would love to talk to him someday, and you know why? He worked with Ayrton Senna, Michael Schumacher, and Fernando Alonso when all three came first to Formula One. That's, you know, very impressive.
It is very impressive. If we could bring back Simmons and Flavio.
We're not talking about Russell Simmons here.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Just wanted to make sure.
Thank you very much. Quickly, Martin Whitmarsh came out and said this week that he's not going to, well, let's put it this way, volunteer to be the head of the FOTA, or Formula One Team Association, which is sort of like a union. They get together, they have laughs and barbecues. But he's tired of it. He wants somebody else to do it, possibly Eric Boullier, or somebody of that nature who might have more time on their hands, since Kimi Raikkonen really doesn't do very much after racing.
Or before racing.
Very true. Very true. But, you know, Whitmarsh says, we at FOTA have tried to be galvanizing, stabilizing, and trying to understand the issues of all the teams. Whatever happens, we'll continue to try and do things, but I think it would be quite neat for someone else to have a go at it. Don't blame him. I don't feel like getting involved sometimes. Happens to me all the time. So,
well, you know, FOTA and Grand Prix Championship Series, they all come up when they want to negotiate a better deal with Bernie. And, you know, looks like there'll be two series, three series. And next thing you know, Bernie cuts a deal with Ferrari and Ferrari pulls out. And that's the end of that intifada, motorsports intifada, if I may use that word.
That's good. That's a good word, Nass. I just started reading a book about our friend Bernie Eggleston. It's called I'm No Angel. It's not bad. I'll keep you updated on how it's progressing.
It should be like I'm No Devil.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with an extra goodie bag in there, I saw.
Yes.
So, and of course, we have the great interview with Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones.
Yes, Mr. Jones. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call, 850-421-8461, and tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair, right on the corner, right on the price, 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. For a change, no music. but it will come back
that's
soon.
You give, well, that's because you're giving us a little vacation break.
There you go. And today we have action from British F3, Indy cars and sports cars. And in the goodie bag, which is kind of damp today, we shall look at the life and times of man who's kind of down and out these days. And as he said, even some of the Brazilian journalists have deserted him. So we're talking Felipe Massa.
Amen.
Yeah. So we shall start with Snetterton, British F3. This is a facility owned by Dr. Jonathan Palmer and his company called Motorsport Vision. Local lad Jack Harvey, who is a very good talent, he was leading the opening race of the weekend when heavy rains forced a red flag situation, and he was declared the winner. So congratulations to him. Fast Cat from Puerto Rico, Felix Sorales was second, Alex Lynn was third, and Hannes van Asseldonk was fourth. Race 2 was won by our friend Harry Tinknell, his third win of the season. Jasmine Jaffer of Malaysia was second. Third and final race of the weekend was won by Carlos Sainz Jr., his third win of the season, and surprisingly, all of them coming in the rain. Felix Sorales was second. And, you know, there are quite a few names here. Felix Sorales is doing very well, just like Sergio Perez. Sainz Jr. is very talented, and Mr. Harvey is also very highly rated. So we should have some of these kids moving up and doing well in bigger series in the near future. Okay, in the third race, a local chap, Jack Harvey, was third, and he retakes the lead in the championship. He is now on 252 points, four ahead of Sorales. And Felix Sorales from Puerto Rico, man, this is his only second year of motor racing in Europe. Last year he was in Formula Renault and did okay, but he was leading the championship before this event, so he's doing very good, top rookie. And top rookie ahead of Carlos Sainz, that says something. Now, Formula Renault NEC at Assen, which would be in the Netherlands. Jake Dennis won the first race of the weekend. Dutch double world champion in karting, Mr. Nick de Vries, was second. And in the second race, Nick de Vries took his first win of the season. Nick is in his first year of single-seater racing and is already in the McLaren Driver Development Program and managed by Anthony Hamilton. And talking of Anthony Hamilton, I would like to hopefully get some more info on his schmazzle with Paul Di Resta, see if it goes to court or what happens. Jake Dennis leads the championship with 214 points. Jordan King is second with 181. And third is Josh Hill, Bambino of Damon Hill, on 152 points. De Vries is seventh with 110 points. Now, look at De Vries. This your Formula Renault series normally run 25 to 30 cars, and he's a rookie and seventh in the championship in his first year. Very impressive. Australian V8 at Queensland Raceway. Craig Lowndes was the winner of race one in his Holden. Mark Winterbottom was second and Jamie Wincup third. Race two was more of the same, all three drivers repeating their finishing positions from race one. Wincup leads the championship with 2,052 points. Some competition there for NASCAR.
I understand.
Winterbottom, also known as Frosty, is second with 1,970 points. Now, some of these races are being shown on Speed TV, so which is good. Indy cars at Mid-Ohio, which is a very nice road circuit here. Will Power on pole. Scott Dixon was the winner for Ganassi team. This is his fourth win in the last six races at this track. Power was second. Your homeboys, Francais, they were third and fourth, and third was Simon Pagenaud, and Sébastien Bourdais was fourth. Okay, Giorgio Pantano, remember him from the days of GP Habidas?
Yeah, he was like the vintage guy.
Yeah, he replaced the injured Charlie Kimball and finished 14th. Three races remain, and Power is back on top with 379 points. Hunter Ray is second with 374 points, and Castro Neves is third with 353. Indy Lights, and Indy Lights are also due for a new car, which I think is coming next year or maybe 2013.
Now, what I found interesting is Indy Lights is running in a completely different part of the country, while Indy Cars is in America.
Well, most of the races are together with Indy Cars, and some, like, you know, last week they were in Trois-Rivières.
Exactly. So, they were being little Canadien.
Yeah. So, you know, they have a few races. The same thing with GP2. You know, most of the races are with Formula One, but they may have one or two, you know, off the beaten path. But I hope it's not hurting your feelings.
No, not at all.
As much as you like Indy cars and Indy lights, I hope it's okay.
And I do adore this stuff.
That's good. That's good. Okay, talking of Indy lights, third win of the season, another of your homeboy, Tristan Wautier. Championship leader Esteban Guerrieri was fourth. The Argentine driver has 383 points. Wautier with 376 is second, and third is Colombian Sebastian Saavedra with 346 points. American Le Mans Series, also at Mid-Ohio, fifth win in a row for Lucas Lohr, Klaus Graf in their HPD ARX, basically a Honda machine. Chris Dyson and Guy Smith was second in their Mazda-powered Lola.
You know, they can't...
L-O-L-A-L-O.
You know, they can't call it HPD when they race in Hawaii.
Why is that?
Because the Hawaiian Police Department won't let them.
Oh, really?
Exactly.
Wow, that's pretty creative there.
Yeah, thank you. I'm just reaching. It is the vacation time.
Yeah, we need some fillers. Okay, Star Mazda from Trois-Rivières, also known as Three Rivers south of the Canadian border. Race winner in the opening race was an English chap we interviewed last weekend, Jack Hawksworth. Sage Karam from Nazareth, Pennsylvania was second, and he drives for another man from Nazareth, Michael Andretti. Sage won the second race of the weekend. For history buffs, Trois-Rivières is the place where Gilles Villeneuve made a big impression on some F1 drivers who were racing against him in a Formula Atlantique race. World Rally Championship, I'm using what you told me last time. Once again, the competition was lobed, this time in the Rally of Finlandia. Not many non-Finnish drivers have won Rally of Finlandia.
Exactly. That's why Loeb was accepted into the Finnish club that they have up there where they go into the sauna. And
yeah, that's where the club is. Right, in the sauna?
Correct.
Very nice. Citroën teammate Mikko Hirvonen was second. His fellow Finn Jari Matti Latvala was third in his Ford. And you know, this is interesting. Mikko Hirvonen used to be with Ford. And then, you know, you don't know if it's the car or the driver, but now that he is with Mr. Loeb, I was watching his interview on one of these programs, I think the Mobile One Grid or Grid One something, and he said, you know, Loeb is very, very good.
You're kidding.
Yeah. When a good driver says like that about another good driver, then you know that guy is very good.
Yeah.
Instead of complaining, you know, he's a French driver, so the French dream is helping him.
And he gets a better car, and he's treated like number one. Huh, shocking, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay, and Red Bull is expected to be announced as the promoter and sponsor of World Rally Championship starting next year. And the previous promoter was a company called North One. They were also owned by some high-flying Russian financier.
This is big news.
Yeah, this is big news.
This is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And WRC needed this kind of, well, let me put it this way, organized sponsorship, because Red Bull, tons of cash, and they know what they're doing. This is great. I think this is fantastic. And the key is Red Bull now is on board. And we don't know if Loeb is going to sign with Citroën for next year. He might just finally hang it up. I mean, he already says he's got enough money. He really does have enough championships. I mean, after a while, you know, 10, 12, what difference does it make?
When I saw this item today, I said, oh, great. Now Dr. Marco can fire Jari Matti Latvala, Mikko Hirvonen, and whoever he wants.
Yeah, it's going to be laughs.
Yeah. Okay, this is interesting. A1GP, going and still going. Two bids have been received for the once high-flying series. One is from a Dutch-based consortium, and the other bid is from Australia. This has been going on for a while, and hopefully sooner or later we will see the Rory Byrne design Ferrari-built cars, but powered by Judd or some other engine from the Garagistas. And one of the series, they were going to call it the A10 series. They had even put out a website, which I believe is still there. But I would love to see the concept of A1 the way it was, you know, countries.
The countries.
Yeah, it was, it brought in, you know, there was a team Pakistan, team Indonesia, I was very surprised there was never a team like Argentina. There was a team from Mexico, Brazil, though. So
Team USA. Remember Team USA?
Yeah, Team USA. Jonathan Summerton won a race in China. So that was good.
It was exciting.
Yeah. Oh, man, talking of Team USA, did you see the uniform the first year? Oh, God.
That was beautiful. Man. Let me guess. Stars and Stripes Forever.
No, the way it was done, it really looked like prison suits. That was not a very nice design.
Yves Saint Laurent wasn't involved?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Maybe Randy Travis was.
Bingo.
There you go. Okay. NASCAR, Monty on pole. This was very impressive.
This is impressive.
Yeah, Monty was on pole.
Monty?
At Pocono.
Yes.
You know how much they like him in the Appalachian Mountains.
Of course. I could hear the banjos from here.
Yeah. Buenos dias. Okay, Jeff Gordon won the race, rain-shortened race, I should say. His first victory of the season. Casey Kane, no relation to Casey Kasem, he was second and Martin Truex third. On a sad note, a spectator was killed and several others injured by lightning strike. And, you know, as sad as this is, that, you know, it's going to get even worse when there will be lawsuit after lawsuit against the track, against the weatherman, against Weather Channel and NASCAR.
But, I mean, this was completely innocent. I mean, the guy was just standing behind his truck drinking a Pabst Blue Ribbon when lightning struck. I mean, it was his time to go, and you can't argue with, you know.
Man in the sky?
Exactly.
Okay, no, it was pretty sad, you know. I mean, last thing you want to see is something like this, you know. Anyway, moving forward. Oh, Penske boys in the news. Captain has a... This just came out today. Captain has a sinking boat in his Armada. Jay and Mark Penske were arrested, and I have a very strong feeling that his son Jay is named after Jay Signore of IROC series, and Mark after his driver and friend Mark Donahue. Anyway, they were arrested on Thursday morning in the Nantucket Yacht Club after two women claimed they assaulted them in the parking lot, and there was also this accusation of breaking into a house or something like that. More information available on web, of course. Jay, who is the owner of Dragon IndyCar team, was also accused of pissing... this is pretty sad, man. Pissing on the boots of one of the ladies. The Penske boys have since been released, and daddy's money will buy the silence of the ladies, if not the lambs. And that's bad.
Unusual, really. Such a well-behaved family. You don't hear about... I mean, it's not exactly like the Travis family.
Well, you know, there's trouble in paradise and High Kingdom also sometimes.
I understand.
Okay, this is, you know, again, there's no Formula One. We're going to have some news like this filter in. It's still motor-related, if not motorsports-related. This is from the Amazing But True file. I was reading in one of the web magazines here. The first concept drawing of the AMC Gremlin was made on the back of an air sickness bag, and they are claiming this is true. And we all know who bought out AMC and brought Le Car to America. You know, Renault, the one to watch.
You know what's really funny?
Tell me.
Is I collect air sickness bags from airlines.
You do?
Yes. I have a vast array, a collection of air sickness bags from around the globe.
Really?
Yeah, fascinating. I'll show them to you one day. It's just wonderful.
Do you have one from Thai International or Braniff International?
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
All the top dogs.
I can, you know, I'll be flying a few airlines next month. I can get you some of your...
I always request...
Really?
A air sickness bag a day keeps the floor clean.
Wow. Amazing what you learn. Okay, now we come to our goodie bag. As a teenager, Felipe Massa once delivered pizza to one of the teams in Formula One at Interlagos. And this is true. And as fate would have it, today he's driving for them in Formula One. Felipe Baby is of Italian descent and was born on April 25, 1981. His racing career began in karting at the age of 8. His first single-seater experience was in the Brazilian Formula Chevrolet in 1998. After placing fifth in his first year, he won the championship in 1999. He was successful upon arrival in Europe for the 2000 season, winning both the Italian and European Formula Renault championships. In 2001, his impressive showing continued, this time taking the Euro 3000 championship with 6 wins from 8 races. He made his Formula One debut with Sauber and best finish was 5th in the 2002 Spanish Grand Prix. He was test driver for Ferrari for 2003 and returned to Sauber for the 2004-2005 season. I remember him making a lot of mistakes and going off track. Highlight of the 2005 season was outpacing and outscoring his teammate, the 1997 world champion Jacques Villeneuve. And that's when I really got to notice him, you know, when he was doing a pretty decent job in that Sauber. Since the 2006 season, he has been with Ferrari. In his first season, his teammate was Michael Schumacher. Massa started his association with Maranello on a high note, qualifying on the front row in the opening race of the season in Bahrain, only to spin in front of eventual race winner Alonso. His first pole and victory came in the Turkish Grand Prix, and his victory at Interlagos was the first for a Brazilian driver since Senna's triumph in 1993. He was third in the championship in 2006 behind Alonso and Schumacher, your favorite. In the 2007 season finale, he dominated his home Grand Prix and played a major role in helping Kimi Raikkonen, his teammate then, snatch the world title from McLaren drivers. There was no Kimi is faster than you message, but Massa duly came in second. Other wins included Bahrain and Spain. In 2008, Massa was a man possessed and on his way to becoming the first Brazilian world champion since 1991. Whether it was engine done blowed up in Hungary, or the crash gate in Singapore, or Timo Glock's slick tires in Sao Paulo's rain, the Ferrari pizza delivery driver won his home race again and for 15 seconds was world champion till Lewis Hamilton crossed the finish line in fifth. He won 5 other races, Bahrain, Turkey, France, European Grand Prix and Belgium. Misfortune again hit Massa in Hungary during the 2009 Grand Prix weekend. The serious head and eye injury may have been fully repaired, but the arrival of Fernando Alonso at Ferrari has done permanent damage to the racing career of Massa. The F1 teams are now enjoying the summer break when action resumes at Spa. Alonso will start the race as championship leader with 164 points compared to his teammate, who is 14th in the championship with only 25 points. The final European round will be a week later at Monza. If there is an announcement from Scuderia Ferrari, it could be a very long and lonely walk for Felipe Baby.
Outstanding! And there you have it.
And you know, I was reading in this week's Autosport that if Massa had scored half the points of Alonso, Ferrari would be leading the Constructors' Championship.
You think Luca Montezemolo knows that? You think he did a little tabulating there?
Yeah. I don't think he has broken his abacus yet.
No.
He's only attacking LG and Panasonic.
No. I'm sure Felipe Massa has been reminded of that a number of times, and this is the last year for him at Ferrari. It's just done. I mean, if Nicola Tott wasn't his manager, he'd be gone.
Yeah, he would have been gone a year ago. It will be interesting to see who Ferrari... I'm hearing the name of Heikki Kovalainen, which...
I've heard that too. Yeah. A dependable number two.
Yeah, very dependable, I have to say.
And, you know, and Fernando is probably suggesting some of these people. Mark Webber, Heikki Kovalainen, Fisichella might come up. Who knows? All those number twos in the past. Romain Grosjean could come up.
Romain Grosjean would be my first choice.
Yeah. Dependable, young, yeah. Very skilled. And he's really the talk of the paddock right now. Romain Grosjean.
It doesn't surprise me, you know. I mean, if you look at his career path, fantastic.
I mean, all the Formula One magazines have an article on him, and he is extremely impressive.
Yeah, you know, when he did the early in his career, I think that was the first racing series he did was Swiss Formula Ford. I don't remember how many races were there, 10, 15 or whatever, but he won every race.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, so when... He was, you know, when he was booted out of Formula One, he was going to GT1 winning races there, FIA GT. He went to Auto GP1 races there. I mean, it's just very impressive.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised to see Pastor Maldonado on this week's Autosport magazine instead of Romain Grosjean. Is it me or am I completely bonkers?
No, I mean, the guy has won a race, and, you know, it's one of those things. You put him in a nice car, in a fast car, dependable car. Yeah, he'll have a few DNFs like Lewis Hamilton, but he'll come through and win some races. But, you know, Ferrari's situation very interesting. I would love to see, you know, like take a chance on. They already have a race and championship winner, basically. I would like to see a Di Resta or Romain Grosjean, some new tryout, you know, even Nico Hülkenberg.
No, and not only that, but they've proven that they could go and run a world championship with just one car, and the other car could be completely experimental.
Yeah. And another guy that I'm very high on, and again, strictly based on performance, is this guy from Toronto, Robert Wickens.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And, of course, now we've come to the interview segment, and we're talking about Mr. Jones.
Me and Mr. Jones.
Exactly.
Okay, Ed Jones is a young kid from Britain. He was born and raised in Dubai. That's where he did his karting and was very, very successful. And, you know, motorsports is growing in Middle East, so they have a couple of very nice websites. So I've been going in for the last few years checking out what's going on. And he's been just winning and winning and winning. And then last year he moved to England and did the series then was called Formula Intersteps. They used the same car as the Formula BMW cars. Did well there, and now he's in Formula Renault Cup, and you know now he's in the real cutthroat environment, and is competitive and doing well. So I want to thank him. It was arranged very quickly. We wanted to do it earlier, but he was busy with school and all that. So I would like to thank him and wish him continued success in motor racing.
Mr. Edward Jones, please.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you, sir. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Well, you know, since you were born in UAE, let me start by asking you, Kaifa Anta, and I think you know what that means.
Yeah.
Things going good for you, Edward?
Yeah, I got back from Holland on yesterday, as I had a race there in the Formula Renault Net Cup. Yeah, it's going well.
And how did the weekend go for you, sir?
It started off really well. Practice, we were top three for most of it. And then in qualifying, I did my laps under the yellow flags. So that meant they got deleted, my best four laps. Therefore, I had to start 7th and 11th in the races. And I finished 5th and 7th.
And that's not bad. How is our friend Mr. Dutton doing?
Yeah, Richard's really good. He wasn't there on the weekend as the F3 had a race. But I saw him last week when I was testing World Series and he's doing well.
That's good.
He remembers.
Yeah. Great. Now, you were born in Dubai, if I have that correct, right?
Yeah, I was born in Dubai.
And you have lived most of your life there so far?
Yeah, I've lived there all my life up until September. I moved to boarding school in the UK. But still, I like to believe Dubai is my home, you know?
Do you speak Arabic?
No, I don't.
Okay, no, I understand. I have a friend who was there for like almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And to this day, he does not speak Arabic.
Yeah, my parents have been there for 30 years now, and they still don't speak it.
Yeah. And a very fascinating place. I was there a couple of years ago. How miserable is the summer there?
Yeah, well, so usually summer my family usually flies to the UK or somewhere else. It's around 45 degrees now and really humid. But I'm going back to Dubai tomorrow morning, actually, just for a few days to see my parents.
Oh, that's good.
So, yeah, I'll see what it's like.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're flying Emirates.
Yeah, Emirates Airline.
Yeah, they have very good service.
Yeah, I always fly with them. I have the gold card, so they always give me free upgrades.
Oh, very good. I think you should seek some sponsorship also from them.
Yeah, it's been really difficult. I've been trying for a long time to find some of the local companies in the UAE. Uh-huh. But I think they only become more interested when it's closer to F1. They don't realize the like the value of sponsoring someone in the junior series, I don't think.
Yeah. Okay, you won many karting championship in UAE. How popular is motorsports among the young local population, the local Arab population?
To be honest, when I was karting in the UAE, it was usually most of the grid was made up of foreigners, so people who've come to the UAE and not that aren't local. But it's been growing and growing. More locals have come into karting. And it's actually been, there's some quick ones emerging. And it's just getting better and better all the time. But still, it's very far behind from compared to other countries, you know.
Yeah. No, I follow that scene. And it's nice to see, you know, local interest rising up, as you were saying.
It's like some of the drivers, one of the sheikhs, Khalid, who used to kart with me as well. He was pretty quick. And then Mohammed Al-Dahiri, he did the World Karting Championship as well. And they've done quite well. It's just it takes time, you know, for motorsport to grow over there.
Yeah, sure.
But I think they're putting in the fundamentals, so the tracks are there now. And it's just they need more people to get involved, and I'm sure we'll find quick people from there.
Now, there is a Brit by the name of Barry Hope, who is pretty prominent in local racing scene. Do you know him?
Yeah, Barry Hope. He runs Gulf Sport, and he designed the series Formula Gulf 1000, which is the single-seater series over there. I was planning to do that, last year, actually, or the year before, but it didn't happen because of there wasn't enough people racing.
Okay. Now, because of hot weather in Arabia, what is their racing season, and is racing at night fairly common there?
Yeah, the season usually starts in September, from the mid to end of September it starts, and then ends around May or June. Okay. And night races tend to occur on, like, the beginning of the season or the end of the season when it's really, really hot. And it's not, it's like they're well prepared for the night races. It's all the tracks are flood lit completely, and it's easy to see. It's done well.
Now, Edward, did you develop your interest in motorsports from your dad?
Yeah, my dad was always interested in motorsport. He did a bit of karting when he was younger, but he never moved into cars or anything. Basically, I'm doing what his dream was, you know. Even though I'm enjoying this and I want to pursue it myself, my dad, I'm almost living what he wanted to do when he was younger. So
Who is driving your dream, you or your dad?
Me. Well, my dad's chasing me closely, but
okay.
I think it's both of us.
Great. Now, you had a top 10 finish in the... Oh, by the way, you know, I've been following your career for a few years because I go onto this Gulf Sport website. So you've been on my radar for a few years, and I'm happy to see you competing and doing well in European racing now.
Yeah.
You had a top 10 finish in the 2010 Monaco Kart Cup. How much fun is it racing in Monte Carlo?
Well, it was a great experience. Obviously, I've never been to Monaco before that. It's great to finally go there and see the place from not just from on TV. But the track, we drove around Raskas and the swimming pool complex. It's great. Even in a car, it was tight, you know. So to imagine how it is for the F1 drivers is a bit crazy, I think. But yeah, it was such a great event. It actually rained really badly in our final. So that made it even more trickier. But yeah, it was a great experience, and hopefully I'll go back there in single-seaters.
Now, do they use the full Grand Prix circuit for the kart race also?
No. For the karting, they go to the end of the main straight, and then you go right, and there's a hairpin there, and then you just go past the swimming pool complex and Raskas corner. So it's a lot shorter. You don't go up the hill.
Okay. But still very impressive. Huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, last year you moved into single-seaters in the Intersteps Championship using the Formula BMW cars. What was the biggest challenge for you in adjusting from karting to racing cars?
Yeah, the beginning of the season was very tough because we only decided to do the championship very with short notice for the start of the championship. So I had, I think, 3 days of testing of the car before I went into the first race. And in the first race, I was quite a bit off in time. So, yeah, I think it took me a while to get up to speed, and I think it was just days in the car, you know, building up experience and confidence to go faster. And it proved in the first round, Silverstone, I was, I think, 2 seconds off the leaders, which is a big difference. And for the next round of Stetterton, I qualified pole and won my first race. So it was a big change in just a short period of time.
Yeah. You mentioned the word confidence. When a young driver comes into racing or even steps up into a bigger series, it takes time to get going. What is the main thing that starts building up your confidence?
Well, obviously there's the testing. You build up confidence with, like, there's two types of confidence. I'd say the for speed, like having the confidence in the car to go around the faster corners, which is probably where I struggle the most. Because in karting, you don't have any aerodynamics, whereas in cars, you have to get used to that theory through the fast corners. And then there's also the confidence of believing you can do it with the results that come. And so once you start getting results, it's easier to build up and get stronger and stronger. So you always need that a good result to build your confidence.
Okay. You finished fourth in the championship with a victory, 5 poles, and 9 podium finishes. Did this meet or beat preseason expectations?
I think we went into the season not knowing what to expect of the season, but I think definitely I did well for my first year with limited testing. I was pretty pleased with it. And towards the end of the season, my speed was really good. I think I got 4 of my poles in the last 2 races. And like at Brands Hatch, I got triple pole. And it was just, I struggled to convert the pole positions into the wins, which is just through, I guess, experience and confidence as well. But yeah, it was pleasing and it was a good way to start my career in cars.
Apart from the victory, what were other high moments for you and what was the letdown during the season?
Yeah, I think the highs of the season were definitely the pole positions, because I think it was the 2 rounds next to each other was Thruxton and then Brands Hatch. I got out of the 3 races in Thruxton, I got 2 poles, and then in Brands Hatch, I got 3 poles, all of them. So the speed was showing there. And it was just, when you have the speed, you know, in time it's going to come, the results. So knowing that I had the raw speed was important. I think that was the high. And then I think the lows were just it was my experience showing. In like Donington, I spun off in the wet. And a few other collisions I had. It was just my lack of experience compared to the other races. As I only started karting in Europe not too long before that.
Now, as a young driver, when you make a mistake or spin out, like you mentioned at Donington, how long does the frustration last?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things. It's how long can you, how short can you make the frustration last? I think that comes with experience as well, you know. I've learned to overcome things a lot quicker than I used to and realize that there's a bigger picture than just this one race in the junior series, you know. But yeah, I think I've got good at that now. Frustration at the beginning of the year was quite evident to me, and I think I've overcome it quite well now.
Okay. This year you are in Formula Renault. Is the depth of competition very different than what you experienced last year?
Yeah, this year in Formula Renault Euro Cup, the grids is, there's always a full grid of 30 to 40 cars at some races, so it's massive, and the level of competition this year is extremely high. I think lots of people have said it's the highest it's ever been. So it's been really tough to get results. It's been hard, but I've been learning all the time. My first year in the Renault, it's all about learning the tracks I haven't been to before, learning the car, and getting ready for next year when I can really push to get a good result in the championship.
Okay, and what would be a good result at the end of the season that you will feel that, you know, hey, it was good?
I think from now on, from the next round up Budapest, I think we want to achieve top 10s in every single race, if we can. I think that will be a good showing, and top 5, a few top 5s will be really important. And give more confidence, you know.
Okay. Among the rookie driver, first-year drivers, who are some of your toughest competitors this year?
I think the top rookie would be Nyck de Vries.
Mm-hmm.
He also races in the NEC Championship. And who else? Maybe, yeah, I think Nyck de Vries is probably one of the strongest rookie drivers. And it's, yeah.
How is your working relationship with teammates like Oliver Rowland and Jake Dennis? Do you guys help out each other, or it's a dog-eat-dog world out at Fortec Motorsports?
Well, Jake Dennis is in the NEC team, so it's separate to the Euro Cup team. And I don't really go through data with him or anything. But with Oliver Rowland, we have a really good relationship. We work well together. He's helped me come along this year, and we're always helping each other, and we're good friends off the track as well. So it's been great being a teammate with him, and hopefully we'll carry on to work well together.
Another teammate of yours is Josh Hill. Have you met his papa?
No, but Josh is also, because there's the Fortec Euro Cup team and the Fortec NEC team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like separate teams in a way. So like the truck will all be different. Our cars in a different awning. So in my team, it's Oliver Rowland and Mika Packery. Mm-hmm. And Jake Dennis and Josh Hill are in the UK, the other team.
So you guys don't have any overlapping races?
Well, in the NEC Championship, we race together. But usually in the Euro Cup, it's just me, Oliver, and Mika.
Okay. What is the plan for Ed Jones between Formula Renault and the time you knock on the door of Formula One? What series? What would you like your career path to be through? What series?
Yeah, because I still have one more year of school. I'm still quite young, so obviously next year I'd like to do Renault Euro Cup again and fight for a good place in the championship, which is important. And then after that, I think I'll still only be 18, so it'll be a debate whether to go to World Series straight away or Formula 3. But ideally, I'd go to World Series for maybe 2 years, and then I think that's the knocking point where you need to be searching for F1 too.
Yeah, that should be fun. Who is guiding and managing your career at this stage?
At the moment, it's the man who ran me in karts, Kieran Crawley.
Mm-hmm.
He ran me in go-karts. He's run me for about 4 years now, and he brought me to Europe in the karting and just brought my racing on along so much. And I've just stuck with him because my parents are always in Dubai. He's like my guardian, so he takes me everywhere. He sorts everything out for me, sorts it out with the team. It's just good to have him there because he acts as... That's cool.
Yeah. Okay, we're having a very exciting Formula One season. Who do you like in Formula One, both in terms of teams and drivers?
For me, I like Kimi Raikkonen. And Lotus have done well this year. I think it's been his comeback season's been really going really well. I like to see him win one of the races. I'm sure it won't be too far, too long until he does. Yeah, I like the way Raikkonen's style and how he is. He's different to all the other drivers.
Oh yes. Okay, who do you think will win the championship in Formula One this year?
I think it's going to be Alonso, just because he always even if the car's not on top, he always manages to pull out a really good result, no matter what. Well, at the moment, it looks like that. So I think as long as he maintains that, it's going to be his.
Yeah. Okay, we do a show from the left coast of America, California. Have you ever been to the U.S., and do you follow IndyCars or NASCAR?
I've never been to America before. I would love to go there. Sometimes I watch NASCAR, IndyCar, but not so often. There's something I want to look more into. There's always another path. If F1 doesn't work out, you can always go to America, and there's other series there. So I'm interested in that, but I haven't looked into it properly yet.
Okay. Olympics are on. What has been most impressive for you so far?
For me, it has to be the 100 meters, Usain Bolt.
Oh, yeah, I love that event.
Although it's such a short event, it's definitely I personally think it's the best one to watch. It's not just about the sprinting, they're like the mentality of them. You can see them when they're warming up and getting ready. They're all so well prepared, mentally and physically, that it's great to watch.
Have you gone to any of the events?
No, I haven't, unfortunately.
Must be extremely crowded in London right now.
Yeah, it's okay. I'm just, I'm on like the suburbs of London, so it's not too bad for me.
Okay. Now, tell us a little bit about Ed Jones, the young man, not the driver, your taste in music, what kind of food you like, and what other sports you enjoy watching apart from motorsports.
Well, usually when I'm not racing, obviously I like to train, I go to the gym. But apart from that, I find it tough to fit in other sports, unless when I'm at school. I just play tennis or badminton. Those are good. And then music, I listen to all kinds of music. I like, anything really. And food would be Italian. Yeah, Italian is my favorite.
Well, I find most drivers say Italian or Japanese. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, Ed, do you prefer to be called Ed or Edward?
Ed's fine, yeah.
Ed is fine. Okay, Ed, I hope you have a good, safe journey to Dubai. Have a good time with the parents. Finally, we have listeners all over the world, quite a few in the UK. Would you have a message for our listeners, please? And make sure you tell them about your website.
Yeah, please check out my website on ejracing.net and follow some of my races coming up. My next one's the Renault NEC Cup at Most in the Czech Republic. And I'll be looking forward to posting on my Twitter and letting you know how it's going.
Okay, great. It's very nice chatting you, sir. I wish you all the best in your racing career, and we shall hook up with you after the season for a review, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, thank you very much, and cheers.
Edward, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. That wraps it up. Nass, thank you. I hope your vacation is going well. Keep up the good work with the hot dogs and the hamburgers. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our program, just email me, ClarkRogers@F1Weekly.com. There you have it, Nass. Another outstanding program. I want to thank all the listeners. Good night.
Bye.